everyone, and welcome to this Four Corners special, the international seminar on Iran's nuclear program and the IAEA Director General's report started work in Tehran on Thursday morning. The seminar was inaugurated by Iran's top nuclear negotiator, Saeed Jalili. The one-day meeting was organized by the Foreign Ministry's School of International Relations, and panelists and participants from around the globe were invited to take part and express their views on Iran's nuclear activities and the challenges and the prospects of hope for the future. Some Western invitees, however, were not allowed to attend the conference by their own government due to political calculations. Tonight's program is a Four Corners special, which we recorded at the venue of the summit with a panel of analysts and experts who took the time to sit with us and elaborate on the recent report published by the IAEA Secretary General, Mohammad El-Baradei. Welcome back. You're watching Four Corners here on Press TV, and we're discussing the latest report by IAEA Secretary General Mohammad El-Baradei on Iran's nuclear activities. We're joined by our panel of analysts, Dr. Alexander Pikayev, head of the Disarmament Department of the Economy Institute of Russia Science Academy, is with us. We are also joined by Robert James Rigg, ex-chairman of New Zealand's National Advisory Council for Disarmament. Professor Hushang Hassan-Yadi is joining us from the Royal Military College at Ontario, Canada. He's a professor of international relations, and Dr. Munir Zahran, senior expert on disarmament and member of UN Joint Inspection Unit. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time and company on tonight's Four Corners. Right before the program, we were talking about my first question, and I would like to start with you, Professor Hassan-Yadi. Throughout the day, we heard panelists and participants talk about the impact that this latest IAEA report has on Iran's nuclear activities, what will happen in Iran at the end of the day. But what about public opinion? What do you think it has been the impact in a way? How has it swayed public opinion, do you think?
It's very difficult, really, to say at this stage because we are just the report came about. I would say in Iran there is a real conviction by the government that everything is okay. The report is complete and now Iran is clear. I should add that this is not really the appreciation that we get from the international community, because those who are convinced that Iran is has an illegitimate claim on nuclear technology, they continue to raise their problems. Those who are not convinced that Iran is in that path, on that path, then they try to find out what the problem is. So I would say that the report itself is a mixture of a lot of interrogations about what Iran is doing, some positive points about collaboration that Iran had with the agency. And I would be much more cautious, really, than those who jump to the conclusion that or the report is positive, completely positive, or completely negative.
Right. Bob, it seems that a lot of analysts are saying that the IAEA and Iran have had a long history, and they've come a long way. Do you think, would you agree with what Professor Hassan-Yadi just said?
Yes, it is true that we've come a long way, but they haven't come a long way together, and they are still not together. I think that the professor's assessment is essentially my own.
Right.
Those who are antagonistic to Iran, they don't need to be named, will find fault with the report and with Iran, irrespective of what the report contains. Mm. They hold a lot of sway over the Security Council and the Board of Governors of the IAEA, and others will fall into line with them. But fortunately, as far as I'm concerned, it's great that in the last year or two, the non-aligned movement has ceased to be a house of cards that collapses whenever pressure is applied to it, and has begun to be a real force in international policy making. And that grouping is supporting Iran.
Dr. Zahran, would you agree that the non-aligned movement has more clout today as we speak than before, notably regarding its relationship with Iran? Or have these two always been in line with one another and been supporting one another?
I think the non-aligned movement is very active in international relations. Surely Iran has a legitimate right to go through nuclear enrichment, and this has been supported by the non-aligned movement. Still, the members of the movement would have its reading or their reading of the report of the International Atomic Energy Agency, which I, for one, would see it as grosso modo positive. Surely there are some outstanding issues which are to be clarified by the Iranian authorities in the coming few weeks. I hope that no decision will be taken on the state of play at that stage, waiting for the further clarifications to be given by the Iranian party.
Dr. Pikhayov, we heard from two of our guests that what they said was the fact that when you're an antagonist, you're an antagonist, and it really doesn't matter which route Iran takes in its nuclear activities. On the other hand, Dr. Zahran said that we shouldn't be hasty, notably the international community and the West shouldn't be hasty in taking measures before, quote-unquote, outstanding issues are resolved. But this is the trend that we've been seeing on and on. What's your views regarding that, and how do you think this latest report by Mohammed El-Baradei at the end of the day will sway UN Security Council's opinions?
So I believe it's three questions.
Two and a half.
Well, responding to the first one, well, even before the report was released to internet, some Western missions in Vienna delivered very negative comments about Iranian cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency, despite the fact that in real life this report turns out the most positive on Iran, which was issued by the agency in years. However, the antagonists, they of course would capitalize on negative elements of the report, while countries which want diplomatic solution, they would try to capitalize on a positive side. Regarding whether it would have any impact, I would say yes, that antagonists would be antagonists, but as long as Iran would demonstrate willingness to cooperate with the International Atomic Energy Agency, the more difficult it would be to the antagonists to isolate Iran and to mobilize international community behind them. It might happen very soon, by the way. Now there is a very crucial meeting of the IA board. It would give official interpretation of the Mr. El-Baradei report. It is important what would be that interpretation. I believe it's a very big fight in Vienna right now. But if this interpretation could be interpreted by somebody as a positive, I believe we could be quite sure that no new UN Security Council resolution involving sanctions against Iran would be adopted until the end of this year. So for this year, this question would be removed from the agenda, and I believe that Russia and China would do all their best secure that, despite objections and very strong pressure coming from Washington and some other European capitals.
Right. Professor Asanyari, when we talk about the end of the year, it means about a month and a half, first of all. And second of all, China did resist for a third set of sanctions. However, quote unquote, it was reluctantly swayed into the equation. How much clout do you think that China and Russia will have at the end of the day in persisting on the lack of imposition of sanctions against Iran?
I'm afraid not very much. Mm-hmm. If we look at the past two, three resolutions passed by the UN Security Council, the Americans could convince the Russians and the Chinese to vote with them against Iran. And I believe that is going to happen. Obviously, the Americans need some time to convince others or to push them. But it doesn't mean really at the end of the day they will not get what they are looking for.
There is a way to avoid this situation if Iran comes very clear, more clear than what they did really in this process of the report, to answer to the questions raised by the Security Council, because ultimately Security Council is interested really in its own resolutions. And the resolutions are there, as Alvarado mentioned in his report. Iran did not really answer to the main point of those resolutions, which is really suspension of enrichment. So that didn't happen, and obviously that is going to reinforce really the position of the U.S. by saying that, as we mentioned earlier, Iran is not going to accept the international will expressed through the Security Council. And and I think it would be extremely difficult, really, for Russians and Chinese to not to respect, really, their own word, the word that they put in the past in those two resolutions. So, yes, there are some bargaining going on now. The Chinese are looking for something. The Russians are, in my view, are looking for some influence, some role to play, that's right, internationally.
Right.
But at the end of the day, what's important, really, and I'm interested in, is that both they are going to sacrifice Iran for their own interests. And their own interests in regards to their relationship with the Americans and with the Europeans, they are much more important for them, really, than the kind of relations that they could have with Iran, economically, politically, and so forth.
Right. Go ahead, Bob.
I would actually take the liberty of disagreeing with you on that. I feel that until now, Russia and China, at critical moments in the Security Council, have been startlingly ready, prepared, to play footsie with the United States and to become party to dubious deals. But my reading of international politics is that in the last 3 to 4 months, there's been kind of a sea change, especially on the part of China and Russia. Look at, for example, President Putin, the line that he's begun to take vis-a-vis the United States. And in the characteristically more subtle way of the Chinese, have also adopted a much firmer and more principled position. My feeling, first of all, is important to recall that on the Board of Governors, no one has the right of power of veto. So even if China and Russia oppose, an unfriendly initiative, it could still be forwarded to the Security Council. But when it comes to the Security Council, China and Russia both have the power of veto, and there's no doubt in mind that either one of them or both of them will use it to block any attempt to impose sanctions on Iran.
When I was talking about bargaining,
yeah.
In the case of Russia, for example, they are going to, Mr. Putin, President Putin is talking about this anti-missile shield of Americans in East Europe.
Yeah.
So it means that if the Americans come with kind of concession to the Russians in that regard, I'm not really completely convinced that Mr. Putin is not going to seize the opportunity.
As a Russian,
go ahead. As a Russian, I want to get the doctor.
I have to Tikhayev's
comments. Do you think that President Putin's ideology is far stronger right now than a bargaining chip with the United States? He wants a new era in Russian relations with the world. That's a fact, isn't it?
Well, in Moscow, there is a feeling of new strength. The feeling is that Russia is coming back. There is 7 consecutive years of quite impressive economic growth. Living standards improving. Russia is able to spend much more on its military, which were in a big trouble in 1990s. And Russia, of course, has wider freedom of defending its vital and important interests. By the way, let me assure you that no deal on missile defense is possible, because Bush administration is so ideological that, in fact, they offered no prospects for deal until new administration would come into power. And regarding this particular issue of Iran, yes, Russia has its own relations with the European Union. It's a major trade partner. There are important relations with the United States. But first of all, the European Union is also not united on the Iranian question. There is a milder German position and a more militant position of Britain, and at least on a declaratory level of new French president. Also, Russia is ready to defend its position on many other issues, including Kosovo, including another important arms control agreement, which reduces conventional forces in Europe. And I think it is now it is ready to defend its interests vis-a-vis Iran. In the past, it was very difficult because, unfortunately, our Iranian friends didn't give us enough ammunition to defend themselves. Because Russia has interests as a permanent member of the UN Security Council. Of course, it wants UN Security Council resolutions would be implemented. Now, for the first time since 2005, we have Iran demonstrated progress. Iran demonstrated goodwill. For the first time, there is such partially positive report issued by Director General of the IAEA, so that if it would be possible to convince the IAEA board that the report was positive, I think that Russia and China this time would receive an ammunition from the Iranian friend, which would be sufficient enough to delay the resolution until a new progress would be achieved in relations between the agency and Iran, until the outstanding questions right. would be solved within few weeks.
Right. So immunity is the main question right now. Dr. Zahran, I want to give you a chance to respond to these gentlemen's comments, but also one point that Professor Hassan Yari pointed to was the fact that Iran did not heed to UN Security Council call to stop the enrichment of uranium. Now, a lot of analysts dispute the legality of Iran's case going to the United Nations Security Council in the first place. What's your analysis on that?
Well, I think it is clear that it is mentioned in the report of the Director General of IAEA that Iran did not respond to that request by the Security Council. But still, the matter altogether has to be evaluated first in the Board of Governors of the IAEA. And the report of the Director General gave room for more time, since there are some outstanding issues where under each item of them, there is in the few coming weeks, Iran is expected to provide additional information or clarification. So implicitly, the agency, through the Director General, asked implicitly to have some more time for the Iranian side to provide such information and clarification. And I think that the Iranian diplomacy, I expect that the Iranian diplomacy will be very active with the other members of the Board of Governors to explain its viewpoint, which would influence surely the reading of the Board of Governors in the coming days.
Right. Bob, would you like to add something to those comments? And also the fact that the dispute between the legality of taking Iran's issue to the UN Security Council in the first place to impose sanctions, because Iran agreed that the IAEA was the sole technical body sure. to deal with its activities. Go ahead.
Well, I feel personally very, very strongly about this and have since the decision was taken. And I should add, by the way, that that move initiated by the US was strongly supported by my own nuclear-free government, much to my indignation and horror. New Zealand is increasingly in the field of foreign affairs, foreign policy, following the footsteps of the United States. This is a new reorientation of our policy making, which I regret. But yes, I mean, in my view, it was at the very least questionable and at the worst illegal for the Security Council to address that matter. But it seems that we live in an age in which the rule of law is an empty phrase which is invoked only by the United States, which tramples upon the rule of law at almost every imaginable turn. This is a reality that we have to live with.
Mm. Exactly. This is why I think the question is not really one of legality or technicality. The question is purely political, in my view. So whatever we are talking about, really, in terms of Iran to answer to the questions, Iran to open the door to the inspectors and to show the installations and so forth, that's fine. That is not really going to convince those who want really to harm the at least the regime in Iran. So in other words, for the U.S., to be very clear, for the U.S., the question is not really one of legality. This is why in the U.S. opinion, the Security Council is the ultimate responsible of peace and security in the world. So in other words, IAEA is one of the components of this huge machinery that is the UN, and ultimately the Security Council is in charge of to be sure that peace and security is established and is preserved. So this is why I say the question is really political. And for a political question, you have to find a political answer. And the political answer is that the Iranians should convince the Americans that the outstanding problems, bilateral problems, there is a way to solve them. And they could only be solved, in my view, all those problems between Iran and the U.S. when Iran is clearly addressed the issue of Israel. And that is not going to be addressed, as we know, by the Iranian government very clearly. Mm-hmm. So I would say that at the end of this process, I'm very glad that our Russian friend mentioned that he's going to be delayed, that he's not going really to postpone indefinitely the process. So in other words, unfortunately, Security Council is going to be seized again to look at the issue, and ultimately, as I said, unless Iran makes a very dramatic really move, we will see another resolution passed against Iran, and the next one is going to be much more, is going to be harsher really than the previous ones.
Even though if it's illegal?
It doesn't matter really. What's important, as Bob mentioned, the question is really, we have to be realistic.
Mm. Right. We've had a lot of interviews. I've had a lot of interviews with you, and every time we talked about the nuclear issue, you did stress on the fact that the issue is being politicized, and it is no longer a technical issue, and it never was.
You mentioned that. Many years ago, before the resolution passed, I was extremely clear that this question is political, and if Iran doesn't do what it's supposed to do, we are going to see the resolutions, and that was long before the resolutions. Unfortunately, those resolutions came about, and again, I'm afraid that we are going to see more of them.
I don't want to hog the,
go ahead.
The microphone, but,
no,
but I would go one step further. What concerns me is that I see the U.S., since the appointment of President Bush for the first time, the U.S. is systematically undermining multilateral institutions and values, attacking the United Nations, attacking disarmament and non-proliferation agencies. The OPCW was one, and now the IAEA. But at the same time, it turns to the IAEA, a disarmament and non-proliferation organization, in the hope that the IAEA will provide it, the United States, with a carte blanche for a military attack on Iran. So they're trying to convert a disarmament and non-proliferation organization into a provider of justification for military intervention in states which are not acting in the interests of the United States of America. This I find very worrisome.
Right. We're going to take a short break right now. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion, so stay tuned for Four Corners News and Brief is coming up next here on Press TV. Welcome back. You're watching Four Corners, and we're discussing the latest report by IAEA Secretary General Mohammad El-Baradei. Meanwhile, here in Tehran, the international seminar on Iran's nuclear program and the IAEA Director General's report took place on Thursday with the participation of guests from all over the globe. We have a panel of analysts right now joining us on tonight's Four Corners to get to the heart of the matter. During the first half of our program, we talked about this report and the impact it has on public opinion, on the way it might sway United Nations Security Council resolutions in the near future. What's China and Russia's stance? Now we're going to get to the NPT and the real issue of disarmament. From Russia, we are joined by Dr. Alexander Pikayev, head of the Disarmament Department of the Economy Institute of Russia Science and Academy. From New Zealand, we are joined by Mr. Bob Rigg. He's the former chairman of New Zealand's National Consultative Committee on Disarmament. From Ontario, Canada, Professor Hushain Kasanyadi, Professor of International Relations from the Royal Military College of Canada, and also from Egypt, our guest, Dr. Munir Zahran. He's an expert on disarmament and also the former president on the Conference of Disarmament. Gentlemen, once again, welcome to tonight's Four Corners, and I'd like to continue our discussion with Dr. Zahran. During the break, you said you wanted to add something to the third set of sanctions, possible sanctions, so to say, which are planned to be imposed against Iran in the near future by the United Nations Security Council, despite the fact that a lot of analysts today, especially at the conference, believe that the third round is not going to be seen.
Well, I think that those who are promoting the question of sanctions should be very well aware of the backfire of that issue on them, since unilateral economic sanctions are illegal, are violating the human rights. There are resolutions adopted by the General Assembly condemning them, as well as the Commission on Human Rights, violating political, civil, economic, social, and cultural rights. And this will have an impact on the developing world, and in particular the non-aligned movement. So this will strengthen the solidarity between the non-aligned countries and Iran in that case. And Iran is an active member of the movement.
Right.
So I think that I'm cautioning against hastily going to additional unilateral sanctions on the part of the United States and others.
Dr. Alexander Pikayev, let's talk about the NPT. There has been some discussions about the NPT itself. On the one hand, some say its framework is outdated. Others say that it only deals with non-proliferation issues and not disarmament. Do you think we need a new system in dealing with nuclear non-proliferation and disarmament, or is the NPT the path to take and the path to go?
Well, what we need is improving the whole system, but I think it would be a big mistake to behave like that. Okay, we have imperfect NPT, let us trash it and let's build something else on that empty place. I think it's wrong strategy, because NPT, despite all its obvious deficiencies, it survived around 40 years, and it helped us to prevent nuclear proliferation among maybe few dozen countries. And we even have interesting precedents that when countries possessing nuclear weapons actually refused from that because they wanted to be non-nuclear members of this treaty. I may refer on South Africa, I may refer on Ukraine, which after the Soviet collapse possessed the third largest in the world nuclear arsenal. But nevertheless, it decided, under certain incentives provided it by Russia and the United States, decided to go non-nuclear. I think this is very important, and the non-proliferation treaty played important role and still continue playing important role, but what is needed is to improve that. And here we come to a real question, how we could do that, because it's a universal treaty. Only four countries are not member states. All other countries in the world participate there. So to change the treaty, you need a consensus. And if you open the treaty, which is a very, very delicate package of deals between non-nuclear, nuclear states, developed and developing nations, so if you open this carefully made fragile package, you could enter a phase of endless multilateral negotiations, and you could imagine how difficult it would negotiate between almost 200 member states. So it might be a way to ruin the treaty eventually. So that we need to find a way to improve the system without damaging the non-proliferation treaty, probably to elaborate, to negotiate new norms which would improve non-proliferation regime, and certainly nuclear nations must pay much more attention to fulfill Article 6 of the treaty. They had obligation to negotiate nuclear disarmament. Unfortunately, during recent year, this process rolled back. The U.S. administration thinks that it doesn't need any new nuclear disarmament agreements at all, and this this creates a significant problem for the non-proliferation regime as well.
Right. Then, Professor Hushangyari, then there's the discussion of double standard policies even between member states of the MPT. For example, we have the United States, which is a member state. It signs a deal with a country like India, which is not a member state. So the countries that are members within the MPT, are they respecting this treaty as it should be respected?
Yeah, 2 points before getting to that one. The first one is the bad law is much better than a lawless system. So we can't really live in the absence of anything if and should NPT disappear. The second one is in regards to Mr. Zahran's point about the sanctions. Here we are not talking about unilateral sanctions. We are talking about sanctions to be imposed by the Security Council, if we get to that point. As far as your question in regards to the double standard and all of those issues, obviously the system is based on discrimination. Those countries with nuclear capability continue to keep their capability. Not only that, but they improved it, they expanded, and so forth. And those who did not were, to some extent, sanctioned. In between, you have a number of countries. You mentioned the case of India, Pakistan, Israel, and so forth, who became nuclear. And also, as my colleague mentioned, others who renounced simply to do it. I think what's important, really, in this regard is that we need a system that could work. The system that is in place now is extremely fragile. It's very, very weak in itself, and there is a need to go back to look at the issue harder to find some imaginable, really, solutions to this very fine question, because we cannot really continue to expand the arsenal in some countries, but by the same token prevent some other countries to enjoy the rights that they have based on the NPT. So in other words, there are a number of countries who try to stay out of this business of nuclear right. weaponry and so forth, but they are sanctioned by the other mm-hmm. members of the regime.
Right.
And so this is why we are talking about double standard. Yes, that exists. That's the reality, unfortunately, of the world politics. And there is a need, really, to revisit the whole issue. But again, as my Russian colleague mentioned earlier, it might be extremely difficult, really, to go back and to take back the advantage that those very selected countries, members of this nuclear club, are enjoying
right.
and distributing a more fair business
right,
opportunity
to everybody.
Bob,
do you think that, I mean, one thing that I'm sure everybody agrees is that the principles of the MPT are in the right place, and whoever in their right mind reads it says, yeah, this is a really good treaty, you know, we should all abide by it. Do you think the problem with it is double standard and discrimination right now? The problem is the way that countries are dealing with it, so to say.
Well, I think the problem is not simply one of double standards. I think at the heart of the MPT was a kind of a Faustian pact that was struck over the question balancing disarmament against non-proliferation. And the political basis for this was, in particular, non-nuclear states and developing states at the time were reluctant to forswear the possibility, the nuclear mm-hmm. option. Unless they were offered something concrete in return. So the bait that was tossed in their direction by the nuclear possessors was a vague, wishy-washy undertaking to disarm at a very indeterminate point in the future. Now, that the nuclear possessors have never in any way, any meaningful way, followed through on that undertaking. Yes, they have in certain ways reduced the number of warheads, cosmetic changes, but at the same time, they have, in reality, they've enhanced their nuclear capability by developing new delivery vehicles, new missiles and so on and so forth, and much smaller warheads, which are capable of inflicting considerable damage. So the next thing that bothers me about it is that, which has not been talked about today because the focus was on Iran,
right.
But Mohammed al-Baradei himself, a year or two ago, gave a very thoughtful speech in which he pointed out that as many as 24, I think was the number that he mentioned, states at this moment that are not formally defined as nuclear states are in a position at the turn of a screwdriver, was the expression he used, to go nuclear capable overnight. The world, in other words, is at a tipping point in nuclear terms. And more players, not many at that point, for example, Japan is sitting on 35 tons of enriched uranium. Legitimately, you know, produced as a consequence of its nuclear energy. Japan is also technologically very advanced. There's a lot of money floating around. If Japan wanted to go nuclear, and this is being talked about all the time in the Japanese parliament by right-wing deputies, it could do so in a matter of days or weeks, probably. Other states are in a comparable position. So this, I think, is the real challenge now confronting the NPT. On the one hand, how do they balance disarmament with non-proliferation? And on the other hand, how do they come to terms, given their mandate, with the fact, with the reality, that more and more states now are wanting to do what, actually not what Iran's doing, because that implies that Iran wants to go nuclear,
mm-hmm.
but want to develop nuclear energy, including the enrichment cycle. So in the last month or two, Jordan, Yemen, and Egypt, I think, have all said that they want to develop nuclear power for peaceful purposes.
That's right.
Yeah. And with, of course, the full enrichment fuel cycle, which enables them to produce enriched uranium. So they will be allowed to do, and the U.S. is actively assisting these states in these activities. So they are, because they're friends of the U.S., they're allowed to do what Iran is not being allowed to do.
That's right. Dr. Munir, I want to get your views on what Bob just said, and also the fact that why isn't disarmament, which is a key component of the NPT itself, why is it not getting the same leverage and the same challenges as proliferation today as we speak?
Well, first, Hassan referred to my previous interventions regarding the sanctions. I'm warning against imposing additional sanctions against Iran, not only from the Security Council, because Security Council, it will be very difficult for the United States to get it through, since not only Russia and China who have veto powers there, but there are non-aligned countries, members of the Security Council. Don't forget that. And there are non-nuclear weapon states, members of the other 10. So if they fail to do so through the Security Council, this was my idea, that they might go outside of the Security Council and impose unilateral sanctions, which is illegal. And there are various resolutions condemn that. I'm warning against that.
Right.
So concerning the issue of nuclear disarmament, almost the great majority of countries are for negotiating nuclear disarmament. And since we, in the Conference on Disarmament, we terminated negotiations on the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, the Conference on Disarmament is in a kind of stalemate, hibernating, because the issue of priority for the non-nuclear weapon states from this house was negotiating nuclear disarmament, which is item one on the agenda of the Conference on Disarmament since 1979, since the creation, the establishment of the conference. And the nuclear weapon states from the West opposed, and we were unable to advance the cause of nuclear disarmament in the Conference on Disarmament because of the rule of consensus. You have to agree on a decision to establish a committee, an ad hoc committee, to negotiate nuclear disarmament by consensus.
Mm-hmm.
There was no consensus.
Right.
So there is a stalemate. But still, I am really optimistic that maybe things will change. Since the toughest party to this issue was the United States, now four members of the Republican Party who used to be ministers or very high-ranking politicians, like William Perry, like George Shultz, Henry Kissinger, and Sam Nunn, issued an article in the Wall Street Journal this year, early this year, calling for a gradual reduction of nuclear arms, leading to nuclear disarmament. Mm-hmm. The four personalities in one article saying that and giving reason to Rajiv Gandhi when he went to the General Assembly in the 80s, at the beginning of his tenure as Prime Minister.
Right.
And he called the state of affairs in the world as a nuclear madness, and he called for nuclear disarmament. They gave reason to Rajiv Gandhi, who passed away
right.
now in 2007. There is a move on the part of the United States, and which would have surely an impact on the other Western countries.
Right.
Surely Russia and China will have no reason to keep such nuclear arsenals
right.
if the United States will go in the direction of
right.
nuclear disarmament.
Steadily but surely.
Yes.
Let's go back to the report by the IAEA Secretary General. One point in Article 39 states that while there has been progress in dealing with outstanding issues related to Iran's past nuclear activities, the agency's knowledge of Iran's current activities is shrinking. What does this mean for future negotiations, and how does this put the resolve of outstanding issues into the equation at the end of the day?
Well, first of all, I think that there is a positive momentum established by a recent report, and I'm pretty sure that remaining relatively minor outstanding issues would be solved. But then after that, we would come to a really significant problem. It's a problem of transparency, because former President Reagan said, trust but verify. So the agency wants to verify that Iran complies with its non-proliferation obligations. And for that, the agency believes that additional protocol should be adopted by Iran. Iran voluntarily absorbed that for several years, but then after some collision with the European Union and the United States, decided to stop the observation. In few weeks, maybe a few months from now, this issue would be of central importance, because agency really needs inspections which are permitted by the additional protocol. And here there are problems from the Iranian side, because Majlis adopted some law which prevents Iran to return back into compliance with additional protocol. So some complicated diplomatic processes needed
right, so
to solve the problem.
So it's not very worrisome at the end of the day when we hear this clause, because the Western media has been using this as a chip to say that, you know, perhaps Iran has clandestine operations with Iran, which Iran has noted it doesn't.
We in Moscow, and I think people in Beijing as well, believe that it's a wrong time now to have any decisions which would undermine the progress. I mean, we need to give a chance for this progress.
Right.
And all unilateral steps or collective sanctions would be highly counterproductive in this situation. This is why the Russians were very disappointed by the decision of the United States to impose unilateral sanctions against Iran when Iran seriously started to cooperate with the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Right.
We consider that as an attempt to undermine the progress, undermine the prospects for diplomatic solution. So that for some period of time, when I think momentum would go forward, everything would be relatively smooth. But we need to realize that this question of additional protocol
right.
or transparency as a whole is very important, and it would be really central sometimes in the future, maybe early next year.
All right. Professor Hassan Yari, your concluding remarks. At the end of the day, how do you think, or in what way do you think is the best way out of this current standoff that has been caused regarding Iran's peaceful nuclear activities?
I think that there must be a change in the behavior of the Iranians and the Americans, because those are really the main components of this problem that we are going through. I'm not very sure about that one to happen. So I would say in this window of 1 year or so that George Bush has, he's going to seize the occasion, opportunity to put as much pressure as he can on the Iranians, and ultimately, if it doesn't really get what they want and what they see as the threat of Iran to be resolved, we should not really rule out the possibility of a confrontation between Iran and the U.S., or U.S. and Iran, I should say. I don't see really the future as clear and as bright as my colleague see it, based on what happened in the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but we can hope for the best. That's
absolutely
for one thing.
Sure.
All right. Okay, Bob, I want to get your remarks. I want to get your response to what Professor Hassan Yari just said. Iranian officials and the Iranian media believe that Iran has done all it can to remove the obstacles, to remove the quote-unquote outstanding issues, 2,500 hours of snap UN inspections on the one hand, voluntary suspension on the other. What needs to be done for this issue to be resolved?
First of all, by the way, I accept the truth of the statement by your Deputy Foreign Minister at the close of today's conference. That Iran has done its level best, that and when he spells out in detail, you know, the number of inspections, the intensity of the inspections and so on. First of all, Iran has been required to submit to a barrage of scrutiny,
right,
which no other member state of the OIC has ever been subjected to. And in the end, although at times it may have been slower than some people would have liked, it's kind of come to the party. With results that the IA itself has found credible, and most critically, because there are so many words. But the part of the problem here again is the general public doesn't understand the central importance of the verification of non-diversion of nuclear materials by the IAEA. In all these, so in the current report, there's one sentence at the beginning of one of the concluding sections just about this, and it's lost in a welter of detail. But if the IAEA finds that there has been no diversion of nuclear materials, it's essentially saying that in terms of its mandate, the IAEA, the Iran, is conducting itself well and appropriately. For the rest, I think the future is cloudy. But at present, after months and months of feeling rather anxious about what's actually going on in the US, at present I feel that for the time being at least, and things could change, it seems to me that Cheney is even more isolated than he was, and his dwindling number of supporters, even military leaders, have spoken out against military intervention in Iran. And their reasons, by the way, were quite the cold, hard reasons of military practicality. What they were almost all saying was not it's immoral or it'll be a bad thing, or they were saying, we're currently engaged in two major wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, which have extended our military resources almost beyond their limits. The United States simply is not in a position to engage in a third war at this stage.
Right. I want to get your concluding remarks, Dr. Zahran. At the end of the recent seminar, Mr. Evans said that life is a learning experience, even for the neocons. And with what Bob just said, how do you evaluate the future for the United States and its neocon policies?
I think it would be very difficult for the United States to attack Iran. It's not very difficult because they are incapable of doing it, but because of the repercussions. There will be a retaliation on the part of Iran. Where? Maybe in Iraq, maybe in the Gulf countries, maybe against American bases in the region. So it is a kind of madness to go that way, because it would be not only a regional disaster, this would be a worldwide disaster with the implications on trade and on finance and all such issues at the economic front. So I don't think, or if they go that way, so they have to bear the consequences, but I am doubtful. But still, since this issue was raised, still I am still optimistic. Because a meeting was scheduled with Khafir Solana in 1 week time, and also I read in the news, or I have seen in the TV news, that Washington stated that there will be another meeting with the Iranian side in the near future.
Yes,
through this kind of understanding and dialogue and interaction, maybe we will find a way out, particularly in light of the latest report of the DG of the IAEA.
Thank you very much for those comments, gentlemen. As much as I'm enjoying this, we've unfortunately run out of time. Thank you very much for your views, for your comments, for your patience. This is one of the few Four Corners specials that we recorded, and you gentlemen were very, very participating. Thank you. And as the viewer, thank you for staying with us and watching. Send us your questions and comments to Four Corners@PressTV.ir. We're looking forward to them. Until next time, goodbye.